Watch the world outside, by the way, I'm leaving out today. Do it with me. I just saw Haley's comet, she waved, said, why you always running in place? Even the man in the moon disappeared. Somewhere in the stratosphere. Tell my mother, tell my father, I've done the best I can to make them realize this is my life. I hope they understand. I'm not angry, I'm just saying, sometimes goodbye is a second chance.
How long do you think it took me to recognize that song?
2 seconds.
Yeah, it was pretty much 2 seconds.
I had to listen to it. This is how loudly I was listening to that when you were setting up.
Oh, that's what you were doing. Okay.
Still can't hear it, but wait, if I put it close to your ear.
I feel like you were listening to it a little louder because I could hear it the first time. I couldn't hear what it was, but I was like, oh, he's listening to something. Here, there's no audio coming out at all. Shinedown's a good band. They put out several good songs, which is more than most bands could ask for. I think as far as, like...
Maybe I'll listen to that album tomorrow.
The bands that embody the heyday of butt rock are concerned. Shinedown is among the best.
What? Who calls it that?
A lot of people online.
I don't like that term.
that whole genre of Shinedown and, like, Nickelback,
Rise Against,
Three Doors Down. No, I think Rise Against has, like, a more respectable place in, like, the metal rock genre.
Anyway, that song felt very apropos.
Why is that?
And I don't just mean, never mind. Woody Allen's book's called Apropos of Nothing.
I see.
Well, let's get to it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 265th episode of What's in the Box Office, your weekly look at movies and the money they make. Each week, we sit down and pore over the weekend's box office returns and tell you what we think they mean for the industry at large. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm your host, Noah. Another thing that, despite our efforts, you just can't get rid of.
What?
Just the rest of the subject of our podcast today. We tried to expel before, and they're back all the same, much like myself. I'm back.
Yeah, Noah's back. Yep. All right. Feature presentation. Let's get to it. Noah, this is your brainchild. Kick us off.
Yeah, we have finally concluded awards season. The Oscars were here and they were good, but they're done now. And it's time for Multiplex Madness to make its triumphant return. We did the draft for this year's tournament a few weeks ago. It is Multiplex Madness second run. A revisiting of every movie that we previously considered for a draft in one of our tournaments, but did not take.
Mm-hmm.
Because these movies made the long list for a reason. They're interesting. They're big blockbusters. They're really good movies. They have good accolades to them. But sometimes you just can't beat out Titanic. And that's fine. There's no disrespect. But... we wanted to give some shine to these movies that deserved it, but couldn't make it in the first time. So we have concocted this brand new tournament to crown. I think I've been saying the greatest unsung movie in Multiplex Madness history.
I guess we better take A Star Is Born out of it then, because there's a lot of singing in that one.
We also better take out Second Chance by Shinedown, been sung.
Well, no, we don't have to be unsung.
That's true.
The podcast can remain sung.
Yeah, we will continue to not pay the mounting music bills.
Don't talk like that. It freaks me out. You could have commented comically that whole time I was singing. And that would have negated it, I think.
I hope that's the law. That would be really good. Yeah, I didn't want to step on it. Shinedown was playing. You kidding me? You got to let that breathe.
All right. So this, we have 32 contenders. We drafted them. This week we're doing 16 of them. The first half of the tournament. Ooh, we don't have names for the divisions, do we?
I like what you did in the docs. I think we will be doing the Multiplex Madness division and the Multiplex Madness Forever division.
All right. So these are the films that, especially the first year we did this, Multiplex Madness, the first one ever, way back in 2020. This is 4 years ago, and six tournaments ago. And we didn't really do a draft. We just kind of looked at the top of the box office for the past 10 years and just picked a bunch of eclectic stuff. Stuff we thought should go in there either because of how impressive they were or just for cultural cachet. Hence the inclusion of Halloween, the Halloween reboot.
Yeah.
Or Get Out, which ended up winning the tournament. So these are the films that we could have picked but didn't. So here we go. Noah, run through them 1 to 8.
All right. 1 to 8, we have Gravity, The Hunger Games: Catching Fire, Inside Out, A Star is Born, then The Martian, A Quiet Place, Dunkirk, and True Grit.
That's right. So how do the rules work? This is a whole new tournament. What's going on here?
So we are going to be running down each bracket is its own little mini tournament revisiting. Like you said, this is the 2010s. We're going to do the usual, we're back to our five categories of we're grading based on profit relative to budget, quality of movie, impact upon release, harder road to success, and then legacy.
All right.
And they will all converge at the end.
Let's get to it. First of five?
Yeah. Well, best of five.
Best of five wins. First of four. First of three. Gravity, the one seed versus the eight seed True Grit. Gravity came out October 4th, 2013. Its opening weekend gross was $55 million. Final was $274. It had the biggest October weekend of all time, and it was the number one October released film. Highest grossing film ever released in October. At the time, 10 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best Actress for Sandra Bullock, and it won, of course, Best Director for Alfonso Cuarón. True Grit was released December 22nd, 2010. Opening weekend was $36 million for that 5 days since it opened over Christmas. Final gross was $171. It had 10 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director for the Coen Brothers, Best Actor for Jeff Bridges, and Best Supporting Actress for Hailee Steinfeld. So our first category is always the math one.
Yes.
Bigger profit relative to budget. Well, Gravity had a budget of $110 million. It grossed $723, profit of $657. This, of course, is not a guaranteed profit. But I feel like we've talked about this in the past, but, you know, it's not just what a movie costs that makes it money. It doesn't just gross back what it costs. Marketing costs, distribution costs, all these are factored in. Generally, a movie to make a profit has to make about three times what it cost or so. This is just saying how much more did it make than its budget.
Yeah, this is definitely a very very simplified version of the math. There's no way of knowing exactly how much money this movie made for its studio. But because we're grading them all on that same scale of just gross relative to the budget that is on usually Wikipedia, I feel comfortable with it, even if it's it is not an exact measure of profit.
True Grit cost $38 and made $252 worldwide. That's profit of $663.1 does go to True Grit here.
I feel like this entire matchup is going to be that close.
Really? I'm going to sneeze.
Yeah, it was a difference of 6 percentage points. So, yeah, bless you.
Thank you.
True Grit does get the first point. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a very interesting matchup.
Well, let's get to it then. Quality of movie.
Yeah, I am curious as to what you have to say. I feel like my take on this is not going to come as a surprise.
No, it won't. You don't care for Gravity that much. I think Gravity is... a masterpiece of visual filmmaking. I think that it was incredible in IMAX, and I think it has a terrific star performance from Sandra Bullock. It gets my pick here for quality of movie, while True Grit is also a ton of fun and features a bunch of wonderful performances. The impact of Gravity and how impressive it is remains, keeps it on top.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Gravity head, but I get it. And you know, maybe in the future, my opinions on Gravity will be changed. Who's to say? But yeah, I not the biggest fan. And True Grit, I think, was a really great, like, interesting bit of Coen-y adaptation. A lot of great performances, likewise, in that movie. And just a really, really great Western. So I am voting for True Grit there while you vote for Gravity. And Gravity gets its first points on the board.
All right. Next is Harder Road to Success.
Let's impact upon release, I think, is what comes out. We could do Harder Road to Success if that feels right.
I feel like
we'll just settle that.
Because that's like the expectations before it came out we're talking about.
Sure.
And then it's released, and we talk about impact upon release, and then after it's released, we get
that tracks for me. Harder Road to Success is next.
Yeah, so, Gravity does have the names in it, but so does True Grit. Gravity really solidified the Bullock thing. She had won for The Blind Side in 2000.
2011?
The fuck did The Blind Side? Did that come out in 2009? I think that came out in 2009.
I'll tell you in a second.
Sure. You tell me in a second. Quaron is obviously not a huge name at this time. He did the Harry Potter movies, but it wasn't like, you know, that's not sold on his name.
2009.
And I think that the final gross of $274,723 is pretty huge for a relatively action-free movie. Whereas I do think that Christmas is very kind to big movies around Christmas. I think it was a weak Christmas season, and not in the sense of the film's release, although probably, but that's not to disparage the quality of True Grit. I just mean that I think that there wasn't much, like Little Fockers came out, in 2010.
Sure.
And, there wasn't like a big behemoth like Lord of the Rings or, you know, Avatar or stuff like that. So I really benefited from that. And also Christmas Legs are a thing of beauty. I can see a really well-reviewed movie kind of walking into this total. And it didn't do anything overseas, whereas Gravity did.
Sure.
So I think there's that there. But I don't know. I'm curious to know your thoughts on this.
I think this is yet another category that is tremendously close. I think that I feel like you're underselling a little bit the success of True Grit getting to 171 million. Like, do you know? I have to imagine that is the highest grossing Coen Brothers movie.
It is, yeah. But I'm looking at the Coen Brothers now because they obviously win their Oscars in 2005. Let's see. I don't think Oh Brother did anything, but there's a chance. Oh Brother had 71 worldwide. I know that Intolerable Cruelty did just okay. Lady Killers bombed. No Country made 70.
Okay.
Burn After Reading made 70. So they're on a hot streak. 2007, 2008, A Serious Man is, we're not, that's just not going to appeal to anybody. But No Country 07, Burn 08, and then they have their big, like, huge Western movie in the winter of 2010. It just felt like the wheels were kind of pushing toward this eventually happening.
Yeah. I do want to just stop you right there and say the phrase, and then they have their big, huge Western movie, as if that's, like, a thing that happens that anyone has had in the past 40 years.
Well, I can look up Westerns then if you
like
want.
Dances with Wolves, and like then nothing really happened until True Grit, just in terms of hugely successful movies. It is, I think, kind of the most famous dead genre.
So Dances with Wolves, Unforgiven in 92.
That was a big commercial hit.
Unforgivable. Ooh, a little stank on that. Hold on.
No, I didn't mean to.
It sounded sarcastic. Oh, was that a big fucking hit?
No,
made $159 okay. worldwide.
Yeah, I meant that very legitimately. I know it was quite good and well received. I guess it is in our tournament, so of course it was a big commercial hit.
Hold on, let me look up. These are just gonna be a whole bunch of stuff. Shanghai Noon's a Western. Yeah, I agree with you. It's not like a huge genre, but I just think if we take the idea that there was, this is Last Samurai listed. Okay.
More of an Eastern, I would think.
Open Range with Kevin Costner in 2003 made 68. I remember that being a thing.
Okay. If we're in the range of like, well, this made 68.
Brokeback.
Okay.
That made money.
Yeah, so it's not impossible, but you'll concede that
Serenity,
like
Serenity, fuck you.
To make a big successful Western is a rarity in the box office, and the Coen brothers, while they were on a hot streak, are not commercial filmmakers. They are artistic filmmakers whose work does just sometimes connect with the public.
But they're coming off their most commercial film ever.
Yeah.
With Burn After Reading. And this is also a very commercial film. I think it's PG-13, which their movies aren't. And it's the big Christmas movie. I just like thinking of a movie with acclaimed directors where they're you know, finally doing PG-13 rave reviews after their most successful and mainstream hit. It doesn't boggle the mind that it grosses 171 during Christmas.
To me, it does a little bit. I feel like if we're talking before 2010, those set of circumstances set up, like, they make a lot of sense. But I think even by 2010, and it's obviously gotten much worse since then, we were already in the, like, the box office is largely in the hands of budding IPs and sequels and not like sort of prestige large scale Westerns.
Mm-hmm. I also think that Gravity coming out in October before the whole, you can release a movie whenever the hell you want and grossing almost $300 million is pretty great. It's not a straight conventional blockbuster and it made $723. It's an original film. That's hard to do for not being based on anything.
I think it's a pretty conventional blockbuster.
Well, it's a one person thing that's like supposed to be done in one shot. That's not.
Yeah, but just in terms of like, just the broad framework of, astronaut is in danger and has to overcome a series of obstacles to save her life. Like that's not. It's not a hard sell, Gravity. I think I should say in Gravity's favor, like my sort of deciding factor in all of these things is like, I think it's insane to me that True Grit made as much money as it did, but as hard as it is to make $250 million, it's way harder to make $720 million. And Gravity having all this going for it, like, no one would have pegged it as that big of a movie.
Right.
So I think ultimately I am voting for Gravity here.
It also doesn't have a blockbuster budget. Like, 110, it looks great for 110.
Yeah. I think you're being very generous to Gravity with, like, this is not a conventional blockbuster. And very, like, poo-pooing to True Grit of, like, oh, yeah, it's the Coen's Western. Of course that was going to make $170 million.
Westerns are a tough sell, but a big, I just in a barren landscape, a big Christmas release of, like, a beloved filmmaking duo finally making a film for the masses. It's happened before. Movies over, you know, As Good As It Gets, which we'll talk about at some point, I think today, opened like 14 and made like 140. Like,
yeah.
It's Christmas does crazy.
That was just a different time though.
If True Grit was released like in March, I'd be like, yes, this is crazy. Christmas is just a weird time.
Okay.
I
take it you're also voting for Gravity in this category?
No.
No?
Yeah. I don't want to. True Grit.
Okay.
Impact upon release. Well, I guess I should have read those now. Oh, well. This goes to Gravity for me.
No, we're not. Yeah, I think that is...
we're not what?
That you don't want to read the...
I already read them. I read them when I introduced
the
movies.
Oh, yeah, I guess, that's true.
That's why I said I probably shouldn't have read it then. I should read it now. So next time I'll do that. But we all heard me say all the things. Gravity has the Oscar noms and the records. I guess they have the same Oscar nominations. Gravity has the Oscar wins, including the prestigious director award plus the records.
Yeah, I think it's... the Oscar win is kind of what seals it for me on top of, like, remember Gravity was very much like, this is the pinnacle of what 3D filmmaking can be.
Not since Avatar.
Not since Gravity until Avatar again.
Right.
I think True Grit was a huge awards player, not to diminish its skills here. But yeah, I'm going to vote Gravity there as well. So we're tied at 2-2.
All right.
With our split votes.
Legacy.
Yes.
I think that in the pantheon of Coen movies, what will stand out from True Grit is the box office. I think that if I were to rank my Coens, it's like high middle. It did introduce Haley Steinfeld, which is big.
That is, yeah. I think that's a huge, I think huge
that's
point
a huge
in his favor.
Point. It's, yep, absolutely. And then as far as Gravity goes, I think it's a huge watershed moment in 3D. Kind of the last big splash of that medium in film as far as like when it hit its peak again since the, 80s and suddenly the late 2000s. I think this is like the last dance for that. And then only James Cameron from now on.
Yeah.
I think that it's a huge, Cuarón got the directing Oscar here. That was his first, right?
I think it must have been.
I know he did, why am I blanking on his later filmography? I got it. Roma.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, he would go on to work for Roma. It was his first, God, Roma's so good. His first Best Directing Prize solidified Sandra Bullock, like her last big solo movie also. It's probably the biggest hit of her career.
It's got to be at that height.
Which I think is huge. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
I think the Coen brothers having such a varied and...
So
impressive
deep.
Filmography.
Yeah, their bench is huge.
It is hard to say. Like you're not getting a lot of people who are putting True Grit in like their top five Coens.
Right.
And if they are, like it's at five. It's not even the best Western they've made. I think that combined with Gravity being like you said, just truly a huge moment in original blockbuster movie making.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was going to see Gravity, seeing it in 3D. I think
IMAX 3D if you're cool.
I think my vote does have to go to Gravity here.
All right. Me as well.
All right. So Gravity is our first advancing in a 3-2 victory.
Our next matchup, the 2-seed Hunger Games Catching Fire takes on the 7-seed Dunkirk. Hunger Games Catching Fire was released November 22nd, 2013, opening weekend $158 million, final gross of $424. Dunkirk was released July 21st, 2017, opening weekend $50 million, final gross $188. Our first category, bigger profit relative to budget. Well, the Hunger Games Catching Fire opened cost $130 million, it grossed $865, profit of $665. Dunkirk costs $100 million. It grossed $526 worldwide. A profit of $526.1 goes to the Hunger Games Catching Fire.
1 point to Hunger Games.
All right, quality of movie. Hunger Games: Hunger Catching Fire is the best film in the Hunger Games franchise.
It is by a pretty considerable margin, I think.
But
Dunkirk is the best movie in the Christopher Nolan franchise.
No, I don't. I wouldn't go there, but it certainly should have gotten him his first Oscar.
Oh, has your take changed on that? I thought you would have.
I think Dunkirk's his best movie.
Dunkirk was his best movie.
I think it's probably Dark Knight.
Okay.
I would say Dark Knight and then Dunkirk. Yeah, I think Dunkirk's certainly the top two or three. I haven't seen The Prestige in a while.
Prestige is good.
I also want to see Batman Begins. I haven't seen that in a while.
It's good. He makes a lot of good movies.
I hear they might do it. I hear Paramount might release Interstellar in November in IMAX.
That would be cool.
It's easily Dunkirk here. I think it's...
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right, Harder Road to Success. Okay, so sequels are tough because the first one was such a huge hit. Why wouldn't this be? So pretty easy, Road to Success.
Yeah.
Dunkirk, it's his first film. No, Interstellar was his second film after The Dark Knight. Trilogy ends. Interstellar grosses like an okay 180. Actually pretty good for what it is. 180 in November of 2014. And this is his World War II picture. World War II? One.
Two.
One. Two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. War movies aren't a big thing. They're not big business. This is I feel like it's got to be Dunkirk. I know it's Chris Nolan, but it's got to be Dunkirk.
Yeah. So the point in Hunger Games' favor is that, obviously, like you said, it's a sequel to a huge franchise movie that already made a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it's a breakout sequel that made so much more money than the first one. And, whether or not you have...
This did? No. Hunger Games: Catching Fire made just a little bit more than the first one.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
I've always thought of that as,
No, just barely more than the first one.
Oh, okay. Well...
It's still impressive, because the first one was, a holy shit moment.
Sure.
And I remember when it came out, people were like, oh man, I really thought that was going to take off. And everyone was like, everyone else, including me, was like, what are you talking about? How could it have made more than 400? You know how many movies? Yeah. First one made 408. This made 420.
Okay.
Four. And watch this. What did I say the opening weekend was?
158 for Catching Fire.
Opening weekend for... The first Hunger Games was 152.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, it was basically the same. That's still hard, but not as not as impressive.
But,
as
yeah, people thought it's in November now. It's getting the Harry Potter slot, the Twilight slot. It's going to just explode. And it's still just it still had the biggest November open. What?
Yeah.
What did he want?
I think for a big stretch there, Christopher Nolan was the big high concept summer blockbuster guy, making the Batman movies, making Inception, making Interstellar, this big
Interstellar
sci-fi
came out
epic
in November.
So not like summer every time, but I more mean like the spirit of he's just making big shiny thing. Whereas Dunkirk. People like war movies. World War II is a well-tread thing, but this is a much smaller scale than a movie where you go to a moon that's made of water and all the time passes. So I think relative to what he'd been doing, this was a weirder bet.
Yeah. I agree.
And so while it's Chris Nolan, I'm on the Dunkirk side here as well.
Me too.
So that is a quick 2-1 for Dunkirk.
All right. Impact upon release. Hunger Games: Catching Fire was the sixth biggest opening of all time. It was the biggest non-summer opening, the biggest November opening. It became the biggest film ever released in November, and it was the number one film in 2013. Dunkirk had 8 Oscar nominations, including Picture, and should have won Director, and it won 3 technical Oscars. I think this goes to Hunger Games.
Yeah, in terms of being a blockbuster podcast, a blockbuster tournament, which this is, You can't discount Dunkirk's Academy Award nominations, the ones it won or the ones it should have won. But, yeah, Catching Fire is just, I think, a little too big.
And it did all this, opening the same, maybe, hold on. Opening the same.
As another movie, perhaps?
Opening the same. Well, the limited release. Fine. 5 days before.
Oh, Frozen.
Yeah. Frozen was released in their little, they do their little limited stuff right before. November 22nd, 2013.
A veritable song of ice and fire.
Oh.
So that brings us to Legacy then, I believe.
Yes. So it's hard to equate just the legacy of the second movie. And as opposed to something that's not, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a beloved part of a franchise that is still alive today. We just had our latest installment of the Hunger Games franchise last year.
Yeah. But it's not like the pinnacle one. You know, it's not like the Dark Knight where you're like, but that's the movie. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There are people who I'm sure like the first one even more than the second.
Right.
You know? So it's not like you can just take it and go like, yes, but it is a huge franchise and it's the crown jewel. I just personally think it is the best of the films.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I agree that it's not like consensus.
Yeah.
The one, it's just kind of the Hunger Games franchise in general. Whereas like, I feel like Dunkirk really marked the shift of Nolan from being like, oh yeah, he's like the fun blockbuster director, to no, he's like one of our great modern directors who needs to be recognized for his achievements.
Well, it's weird. The next film he did after this was Tenet.
And sure.
Oppenheimer.
came out in the quarantine. It doesn't count.
I think Legacy is ultimately going to go to Dunkirk.
I think I agree. I think Dunkirk is a huge precursor to what we got in Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And will be kind of discussed alongside it when you look back on Chris Nolan's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dunkirk is going to be a big part of it. So that would be my vote as well.
All right.
And that gives Dunkirk the win.
Well, the 7th seed taking out the 2 seed. Incredible. The 3 seed Inside Out will take on the 6 seed A Quiet Place. Inside Out was released June 19th, 2015. Opening weekend, $90 million. Final gross, $356. And A Quiet Place opened on April 6th, 2018. Opening weekend, $50 million. And a gross, $188. So bigger profit all to the budget. Well, Inside Out gross, $175. Nope, it made. Nope. God damn it. It cost $175 to make. It grossed $857. That's a profit of $480. And A Quiet Place had a budget of $17. It made $341 worldwide. That's a profit of 2,006%.
Wonderful.
We
always love those here at What's in a Box Office.
So who wins here? Okay, A Quiet Place gets 0.1. Quality of movie. Inside Out was my second favorite of the year. And while A Quiet Place also made my list, Inside Out is incredible. I go with that.
Yeah, I think I said this maybe last week. I said this recently on this podcast that Inside Out
was my fifth favorite movie of the year.
Okay. Well, maybe 2018 was a better year. I might have been.
You tell me. I actually very much was.
Okay. I think Inside Out is the last like capital G great Pixar movie. Sort of marked their.
What about Coco?
I guess I think Coco is quality wise just as good,
uh-huh.
But it didn't have the same like cachet as Inside.
Sure.
And A Quiet Place is like a more fun movie. It's just great. Genre execution.
Mm-hmm.
It was an incredible theatrical experience.
Oh, so good. I saw it twice.
Yeah, the next day.
I saw it the next day, and I sat in the front row so I could look back at everyone who were so shocked and scared.
But I think Inside Out has to be the vote here. I want to say A Quiet Place, but I'm pretty sure I'm wrong, so I'm saying Inside Out.
Harder Road to Success, easily Quiet Place. Come on now.
Yeah, this
Pixar.
Pixar
when it was still Pixar.
Yeah, when they still put their movies out in theaters the first time.
Yeah.
Whereas A Quiet Place was directed by Jim from The Office.
Yeah.
And was just a complete, like, a completely unknown thing.
So what happens when you take a great premise and you execute it perfectly?
That's all. It's sometimes all you need.
Yep.
So Quiet Place is up 2-1 here. As we get into impact upon release.
All right, Inside Out was the biggest opening for original film. It was the number 4 film, biggest film in 2015. Also, very famously, first time a movie had opened to that much money opening in second place. 2 Oscar nominations and 1 Best Animated Feature. And A Quiet Place had 1 Oscar nomination, I think, for sound.
Yeah, A Quiet Place does have the kind of like impact upon release that we can't really quantify in the stats you put together.
Yeah.
Just in that it was a phenomenon that weekend.
And it's hard for Inside Out because it opened on the same day. The reason why it opened number 2, it was the second weekend of June 2015.
Yeah, June 2015 would have been Infinity War? That's too early.
No.
It's
of course it's too early. We just had Ultron a month earlier.
Well, Infinity War came after Ultron, so maybe they horizoned it.
A month later.
Kevin Costner begs to differ. I don't know. Please tell me.
Jurassic World.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yep.
A Quiet Place has its argument in this
category.
I think
it does too.
But Inside Out,
you know,
I'm
picking A Quiet Place.
Okay.
I think it was buzzier, and I do think it's solely because of Jurassic World. I think that sucked. It didn't suck the box office air out of the room because Inside Out made its money, but I think it did suck the buzz out of the room.
Okay.
Everyone was talking about Jurassic World's huge. Who would have thought? What's going on? Everyone's seeing the dinosaur movie. Jurassic Park is back.
I think the sort of overly simplistic reason I'm picking Inside Out is that, to my recollection, everyone was talking about the sad
Bing
imaginary
bong.
Friend, Bing Bong.
Ding dong.
And when he died.
Lip balm.
And that is sort of the lasting impression of the Inside Out theatrical moment.
It's the impression that
everyone going, Bing Bong! And I was among them. It was very sad.
It was sad when he died.
So A Quiet Place, you have as the winner, but I've got it 2-2. So we're down to Legacy here.
Well, I think Legacy is Inside Out. You said it yourself. It's the last great Pixar movie.
Yeah.
It became one of the highest grossing original films of all time. And probably the last time an original Pixar property is ever going to do that. This kind of business.
Yeah, it seems that I still think there's room for Pixar to retool and come back,
but not
to this degree. I think people talk about Inside Out among the absolute greatest that Pixar has to offer, and Quiet Place is a young and healthy franchise, but not quite that. So. Here's the thing we didn't settle on before we started this tournament is the tiebreaker. Most recently, I think, because it is a tie,
right.
I've got Inside Out winning 3-2. You have Quiet Place 3-2. Most recently, I think the tiebreaker we used was which one won one of its categories the most convincingly.
Interesting. Interesting.
Like what is its strongest category? And do you want to try continuing to use that in this tournament?
I guess I'm trying to think if there's anything that we can think of quickly that has to do with the theme of the tournament.
Right.
The idea of a second chance, the idea of getting its due. Which one is most deserving of its due?
I think you could say that, like, pointing out the strongest case a movie has is kind of is highlighting its due. Like what Inside Out has to offer is its Pixar legacy. What A Quiet Place has to offer is its huge profit relative to budget.
Okay, so what do you think is convincing? Which is the most definitive win?
So I think for me, quality is close. We split
on
impact upon release.
Did we do Harder Road to Success?
Yeah, it was Quiet Place.
Yeah.
We just didn't talk about it much.
Okay.
Quiet Place has a Harder Road to Success is probably its most definitive. I feel like profit relative to budget is just like not an exciting way to do it.
Right.
So I'm kind of discounting that. So yeah, for me, A Quiet Place has its Harder Road to Success. It birthed a huge franchise from nothing, from a television sitcom, and turned it into a huge deal. Inside Out, I think its biggest case to me is probably its legacy.
Yeah.
I think just among the Pixar pantheon.
I was wondering if it was quality.
It might be. That was a quality had me thinking like, I don't know. Like, do I want to go A Quiet Place? Whereas legacy, there wasn't really a question in my mind.
I think Harder Road Success being A Quiet Place is good enough for me.
Yeah. Starting a franchise from nothing is like, what more could we want out of movies? So I am fine with that being the decider and Quiet Place moving on.
Wow.
Two upsets in a row. It's interesting that like, because we didn't actually do like the draft proper, the first time, there's so many strong contenders still in this pool that like, I feel like most, if not all, of these movies would have made the actual Multiplex Madness.
Right.
So I feel like there's a lot more room for these upsets in this bracket.
Let's see if we get another one. The 4th seed of Star is Born takes on the 5th seed, The Martian. Star is Born was released October 5th, 2018. Opening weekend was $51 million over the 4-day. I believe it was Indigenous Peoples Day. And its final gross was $215 domestic. The Martian opened October 2nd, 2015, opening weekend $54 million, final gross domestic $228. Bigger profit relative to budget. Star is Born cost $36 million. It grossed $436, profit of 1,211%. And The Martian cost $108. It grossed $630 worldwide, profit of $583. Point one goes to A Star is Born.
It sure does.
Quality of movie goes to The Martian.
It sure does. A Star is Born has its quality, but
first half is great.
Yeah, it falls off a little bit, and The Martian is one of the most entertaining movies of the 21st century.
Harder Road to Success here. Boy, that's tough, huh?
So here's what I think might be the deciding factor.
I think it's
like,
A Star is Born.
Their ending success is like relatively the same, especially domestically.
Yeah.
Star is Born is like a, I don't know about beloved, but like it's tried and true formula of making this movie. This movie has been successful many times. The Martian, meanwhile, has just a tremendously stacked cast of movie stars and beloved actors alike.
And a marquee director.
Yes. I think for me, the thing that makes A Star is Born have a harder road to success is because it shared that road with Venom.
Sure. I mean, I also think that Cooper is, you know, he's a lead who can hit, but he's also a lead who doesn't hit.
Sure.
Lady Gaga's untested box office draw. And it is an R-rated romance. The Martian is, what's The Martian?
PG-13? PG-13 rated potato movie.
No, but it's PG-13, right? Martian MPA.
It must be. Yeah, it's PG-13.
Okay. PG-13, 4 quadrant, you know, movie star on the poster, so many supporting cast. Fun movie. I feel like, it's definitely A Star is Born to get to the same grosses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Impact upon release. Star is Born had 8 Oscar nominations, including picture, actor for Cooper, actress for Gaga, supporting actor for Sam Elliott, and won 1 Oscar for song. And The Martian was the had 7 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Actor. Impact upon release goes to A Star is Born.
Yes. Lady Gaga had that song that was and still is just a tremendous part of the world.
Yeah.
And that seals it for Star
Is Born. I sang it at karaoke.
Yeah. Very well.
Thank you.
That was our first first one that didn't go five. Apologies to The Martian, which is a movie I love very much.
Martian's great. All right, that's it for... So next, we're 2 weeks. What takes on what here?
So we're going to see...
How does the bracket work?
Put yeah,
your
so
bracket in your head.
It's going to be... Gravity taking on Star Is Born. And then...
Okay.
Dunkirk taking on A Quiet Place.
All right. Now, for our second half of our... whatever we're doing... What happened to my sheets?
Multiplex Madness second run.
Yeah, just
round
like
of 32.
Out of it and it didn't burst the whole thing. All right, we go back to the 90s. Multiplex Madness forever. So these were films that we had on our draft list and we did not pick them. So go ahead, read them out. 1 to 8.
All right, 1 to 8. We have Apollo 13, The Santa Claus, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Total Recall, A Few Good Men, Unforgiven, As Good As It Gets, and The Firm.
All right. So the 1 seed Apollo 13 takes on the 8 seed The Firm. Apollo 13 was released June 30th, 1995. Its opening weekend was $25 million. Final gross $224 domestic. And The Firm, that doesn't look right. Can you check that?
Yeah, I'm checking.
The 224?
Yeah.
Is that worldwide? Did I flip those numbers? The Firm.
The Apollo 13 final gross. Got it.
Yeah, The Firm was released July 2nd, 1993. Opening weekend, $32 million. Opened over the 4th of July weekend. And final gross was $158 domestic. What was Apollo 13's domestic gross, Noah?
Its domestic gross was 173.8.
And its worldwide gross was?
355.
Where the fuck did I get 220? Okay. All right. Then that math's probably wrong down there.
Oh, let's see. Yeah.
I'll vamp while you do that.
All right. So this is this number is just based on the...
It's worldwide gross.
It's worldwide gross. Okay.
The bottom is worldwide gross.
Got it. All right. So that should be 355. All right. So we've got to get... 355 divided by 52...
Times 100.
100. All right. So the actual answer for Apollo 13 is 682%.
We throw that in there, and we also change the final gross on Apollo 13?
Yes.
All right. So he said it, 6-something.
82.
682. The Firm had a budget of 42. It grossed 270 worldwide and had a profit of 643. 0.1 goes to Apollo 13. Quality of movie. This goes to Apollo 13 and a cakewalk for me. I think the Therm is fun. I think the Firm is fun, but not super good and long. Apollo 13 is a rip-roaring ride, just a wound so tight. It's just a terrific directing job by Ron Howard.
The Firm is, unfortunately, a little too long, whereas Apollo 13 is... quite a lot of fun and just has Tom Hanks doing it at his peak.
Tom Hanks, Bill Pullman, Kevin Bacon. So good.
Yeah. It's like in 1995, there's nothing more.
Yeah.
You could really hope for.
And because of that,
a big shiny movie.
Harder Road to Success. You know, The Firm was directed by Sidney Pollack, Tom Cruise, a big star. I just think that you can't really bet against, in 1995, a couple months after winning his second Best Acting Oscar, you know, a couple months before Toy Story comes out.
Yeah.
You can't bet against a big space blockbuster with Tom Hanks and Ron Howard at the helm. You can't do it.
I think
The Firm is a harder road to success.
I think
they're both guaranteed hits. But you had a better shot. You had a more sure shot with Apollo 13.
Was anyone a more guaranteed hit in 1993 than John Grisham? I don't think so. But yeah, I think you're right that Apollo 13 is just a little yeah, more locked in. So I'm going The Firm there as well.
All right. Impact upon release. Apollo 13 was the number 2 film in 1995. The Firm was the number four film in 1993. Apollo 13 had 9 Oscar nominations, including Picture, Supporting Actor for Ed Harris or Gary Sinise. And supporting actress for a woman whose name I don't remember, and I apologize to her. Kelly McNeil. No, I don't know. Something.
I'll tell you in a second.
They'll tell me in a second. It won 2 Oscars, and then The Firm was nominated for 2 Oscars, including supporting actress for Holly Hunter, in a truly shocking nomination.
It turns out, word to the wise for those at home, if you just Google Apollo 13, it will bring you to the spaceship.
I'll find it.
No, I got there. It was Ed Harris nominated, lost to Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
And Kathleen Quinlan.
Kathleen, it was a K. I said Kelly something.
Lost to Mira Sorvino in Mighty Aphrodite.
Boy, Kevin Spacey and then a winner from Woody Allen movie. 1995. Okay.
The past.
And no nomination for Ron Howard or Tom Hanks. Crazy. So, impact upon release. I feel like it's Apollo 13.
Yeah, I think this is...
Houston, yeah. We have a problem.
Yeah, come on. That was, I have to imagine, just like instantly iconic.
Instantly iconic. And speaking of iconic legacy, Houston...
Yeah.
We have a problem.
Yeah, Apollo 13 did win it in 4.
Okay.
But yes, the legacy would also go to Apollo 13.
All right, good job, Apollo 13. All right, the second seed, the Santa Claus, takes on the 7th seed, As Good As It Gets. The Santa Claus was released November 11th, 1994. Opening weekend was $19 million across 145 total domestically. As Good As It Gets was released December 25th, 1997, Christmas Day, where Santa Claus is important. Opening weekend was $16 million over that four-day weekend, and its final gross was $148. The Santa Claus cost $22 million. It grossed $190 worldwide. That's a profit of $864. And As Good As It Gets cost $50 million, and it's all on the screen.
they had to train that dog very well.
And it grossed $314 worldwide, a profit of $628. Point one goes to the Santa Claus.
It's wild that the Santa Claus, a movie that is very effects rich,
yeah,
and like makeup and hairstyling
rich, slowly floating to the ground,
cost half of As Good As It Gets, which is a movie about a man who is unhappy.
Quality of movie, Noah. You rewatched As Good As It Gets. We did it for one of our old podcast series called
The Podcademy Awards.
Nope, that's the name of our.
What we call,
It's called and the
podcast goes
and the podcast goes to. Still a great idea for a podcast where we watched. We picked a random year and watched all the best picture nominees. Talked about why we think those won, which one was the better one, and if they came out today, what do we think would have won. We did 1997, where Titanic and LA Confidential and As Good As It Gets came out.
Great year.
Good Will Hunting. What did you think this time? It was As Good As It Gets. What's your pick for quality of movie?
My memory of when we last watched As Good As It Gets was like, oh, yeah, that's like a fun movie that doesn't quite work. Whereas my experience watching it now was like, oh, wow, this is a really fun movie. Sure, it doesn't quite work, but, like, I don't really care. I think the only knock I have to the quality of As Good As It Gets is that it doesn't quite sell the age gap in the relationship.
Mm.
I think he's just
they rarely
too
talk
old.
About it, yeah.
They do rarely talk about it, which is part, I think, of why they don't sell. Like, if it just comes right. up, if there's, like, a scene, it's like, God, it's weird that I'm falling in love with you because... You are so much older than I am. However, the sheer charisma and star power that is coming out of Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt in that movie.
They're so good in that.
It gets pretty close to working.
The waiter's following me.
I think getting pretty close to working is an accomplishment in and of itself.
You pick As Good As It Gets.
Yeah, I do want to say we also rewatched The Santa Claus
a series on this podcast.
Yeah, and my takeaway from that was also very positive. Santa Claus is just like a really, really good, really fun holiday movie. So I don't want to be like, yeah, of course it's as good as it gets because Santa Claus. But I am voting as good as it gets here. And I'm curious to see where you fall.
I'm going as good as it gets here, too. I think it's kind of a slim margin. I think that the Santa Claus has aged worse, which is odd for a movie that's about the worst man in the world.
Yeah, a super racist, bigoted.
So racist and bigoted. But there's something about James L. Brooks' dialogue. There's something about James L. Brooks. Oh, my God. He's so racist. There's something about James L. Brooks' dialogue that is so timeless to me in the scenes where they're connecting and where they're making jokes. You know what I mean? There's something. It's the same thing with like broadcast news could be released today. And just, with today's sheen of filmmaking.
Right.
And you wouldn't have to change any line of dialogue. There's nothing needed to be changed. And then the Santa Claus is just, there's parts of it that are just a little kiddy and a little silly and a little just kind of like, all right, I don't know if we need elves with jet, whatever.
Yeah.
That I feel like the performances and the character development dialogue in As Good As It Gets puts it just a bit over the top. It's truly a Jack Nicholson performance where you're just like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson fucking ruled. He's so funny.
He is. He's really great.
As Good As It Gets. But he's such a piece of shit.
He's
shocking
so
things.
Mean.
Things that's the age thing. You couldn't even put those things in a movie today because no one would ever then fall for his, like, no one would ever then root for his character.
Right. Yeah, you can no longer really have a character who's just like,
it's like in
super
10 minutes,
racist and homophobic,
like,
and shitty, and then just like gets over it.
Yeah, in the first 10 minutes, he's super racist, he's homophobic, he's super racist, and then he's super anti-Semitic all in the span of about 10 minutes.
Yeah, but then he gets a dog and gets happy.
Yeah, then he's like, wait a minute, why am I such a bitch?
Yeah, I'm not racist, I'm just mad and expressing it with racism.
Yeah.
And yeah, that doesn't really fly anymore. So good for James L. Brooks for getting it in under the wire.
Yeah. All right. What, Impact upon release? Santa
Claus? Harder Road to Success.
Oh, yeah, sure. I go with Santa Claus here. I know Tim Allen's like, I know he's like the biggest movie star in the world, but that's I know he was the biggest TV star at the time, but I feel like 145 is pretty fucking huge for we were inundated with live action PG kids movies.
Sure.
Right. Jungle to Jungle. Also Tim Allen, after the fact, Man of the House. No. Yes. What's the one with Chevy Chase that I was just looking at with Jonathan Taylor Thomas? Why can't I think of the name of this?
Man of the House is a movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yeah, Man of the House, first kid. All this stuff. And they're not making anywhere near this, bro. Mighty Ducks. Nowhere near this. Flubber doesn't make this.
Flubber's not about Christmas.
And that's true.
Everyone
loves
Christmas.
True. And again, this goes back to the True Grit thing. I think that like an incredibly well-reviewed adult movie in 1997 can like cakewalk to 148. But I don't know. I think I'm changing my mind here. And
he's counting. Still counting.
Seven letters.
Okay.
That are why I'm giving it to you As Good As It Gets.
Wait, the hang first on. K-R-U-M-H. No, that's not it.
K-R-U-M-H.
Yeah, I was counting how many letters it takes to spell Krumholtz.
Oh, I see.
And it's eight, so that's not the reason. But go on.
The first letter is a T.
Okay.
Then we got another T. Nope.
That's surprising.
I'm sorry. Listen, guys, I'm not smart and I'm not doing well tonight. T. Then you got an I.
Okay.
I'll throw another T at you.
Okay.
I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking.
Those movies don't
but
make
I'm
$100
switch
million
it up.
Either.
I'll switch up. I'm going to put an A in there.
Okay.
You know where I'm going with this yet?
Is it Titan AE?
And I'm going to put an N. But then I'm not putting an E or an A.
Oh, God.
It's an I.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
a
then
much
a
more,
C.
That's a much more obvious
Titanic was released 2 weekends before this. This is making money. This is making 148 on the back of Tomorrow Never Dies doing like 120.
Yeah.
And on the back of Titanic becoming the biggest movie of all time. Harder Road to Success. Boom.
Titanic, pretty...
How do you find a piece of your pie when someone's eating the whole thing?
Yeah. Pretty famously successful movie. I think that is an excellent argument. Yeah. I was already leaning As Good As It Gets just because I feel like a big Christmas movie with big star is...
That's true. It's 2 years after... it's 4 years after Home Alone, you know? Sure.
Yeah. I like that a lot, and lock in As Good As It Gets as well.
All right, impact upon release. Santa Claus, number 4 film in 1994. As Good As It Gets had 7 Oscar nominations, picture and supporting actor for Greg Kinnear, and it won Best Actor and Best Actress.
Yeah.
And a rare feat.
Also,
last movie to do that?
Silence of the Lambs.
That's right. How many years earlier?
6.
That's right.
I so rarely get those questions. Right,
I know,
that's
good.
It also taught me that some restaurants have dress codes.
Sure, yeah. Noah's a child. Was
and
like,
they
huh?
also will like have a house coat, not like a house coat, but like the restaurant will supply you with a coat and tie if
that they don't
bring
often
one.
Wash.
Apparently, and I was bewildered by that, and I was telling you that the scene where he goes and buys himself a coat and tie was like indelibly etched in my memory. And then it was about 4 seconds long. And I was like,
did you remember it being 4 seconds long?
No, I didn't.
Oh, wow.
I didn't remember it being like a huge scene, but I thought it would last a minute, maybe.
Yeah.
It didn't. So it had a huge impact on me upon release. So I'm leaning As Good As It Gets here.
All right.
Also, just huge awards.
For impact upon release, you are?
Yes.
I'm going with Santa Claus here. Number 4 film of the year. I think that's big.
It certainly is big.
I think that's big. Legacy.
That takes us to Legacy.
I think this is also Santa Claus.
Okay.
Spawn a franchise. The TV show just came out.
Oh, the TV show did just come out.
The Santa Clauses. Spawn a franchise. It's still like, you know, aside from Buzz Lightyear, it is Tim Allen's only true contribution to film.
The TV show having just come out, I think really does seal the deal there for me, which means we have our second tie.
Wow.
You've got Santa Claus winning 3-2. I've got As Good As It Gets 3-2.
What wins? Well, okay. What's the biggest win here?
As Good As It Gets, the quality was pretty slim margin for you.
Quality was slim.
Harder Road to Success was a...
That's what I'm thinking might take it. Impact upon release, we split on.
Yeah, and then Legacy, I think we both pretty solidly went Santa Claus. So I think Legacy is Santa Claus's argument here.
Yeah, I agree.
As It Gets, I think has to be Harder Road.
Yeah, because of the Titanic.
Because of the Titanic thing. And we went back and forth on that for a while and like didn't really consider As Good As It Gets in Legacy. So I feel like it's probably,
you seem to consider in Legacy, cause you were like, oh yeah. Well, when you mentioned the TV show,
I was just thinking like, you know, you're saying that the
best actor and actress
win, and also just like a huge Oscars presence.
There's also James L. Brooks' last big hurrah. He's doing a movie now, but after this, he like waited until How Do You Know, I think, and that bombed. So this is like his last huge thing for the time being.
As I've thought about it more, I think Legacy is pretty pretty solidly in Santa Claus's favor, and I think that's a stronger win for Santa Claus than Harder Road to Success is for Good As It Gets.
All right, because
without Titanic, we like might have gone Santa Claus for that.
All right, I agree. Santa Claus moves on.
All right, just narrowly avoids the upset.
The 3-seed Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves takes on the 6-seed Unforgiven. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves was released June 14th, 1991. Fun fact, it was the #1 movie at the box office the day I was born.
That is fun.
Opening weekend was $25 million. Final gross, $165 domestic. Unforgiven was released August 7th, 1992. Opening weekend, $15 million. Final gross, $101 domestic. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves cost $48 million to make. It grossed $390, profit of $813. And Unforgiven had a budget of $14 million and made $159 worldwide. That's a profit of $1,136.1 goes to Unforgiven. Quality of movie, we're both going to pick Unforgiven.
Yes. Yeah. That's not not much in question for you?
No.
Okay.
I was not a big Robin Hood Prince of Thieves fan when I watched it, I think, over quarantine.
Yeah, that's not much of a question for me either. And love Unforgiven.
Harder Road to Success, we're going to go with, I guess, Unforgiven. I mean, 101 isn't like a crazy number.
Sure.
But Robin
not like,
Hood
say,
was,
172.
Well, Robin Hood was 172.
True Grit.
Robin Hood was, you know, the big Kevin Costner vehicle after Dancing with Wolves swept the Oscars and
grossed
a decent amount. So I do think I'm giving it to Unforgiven, but it's a very weak pick.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like Unforgiven has Clint Eastwood, who is a beloved Western figure, making
and a great cast,
sort of like
Morgan Freeman and
Gene
Hackman. Yeah.
Whereas Robin Hood, I think time has shown, is not like a guaranteed beloved IP.
Yeah, that's true.
Robin Hood did have twice as high of a hill to climb to get its success. I don't know. I think you. The Kevin Costner thing is pretty compelling.
Yeah, it was the big June movie.
Yeah. Unforgiven just kind of sleepwalk its way to a 3-0 win over Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
No, oh, did it just win all of them? Wow. Okay, I was going to say Impact is going to Robin Hood. All right. Congratulations, Unforgiven. The 4-seed Total Recall takes on the 5-seed A Few Good Men. Total Recall opened on June 1st, 1990. Opening weekend was $25 million. It grossed $119 total domestic. A Few Good Men was released December 11th, 1992. Opening weekend was $15. It grossed $141. Total Recall cost $65 million to make. It made $261 worldwide, a profit of $401. And A Few Good Men had a budget of $40. It grossed $243, a profit of $608. Point one goes to A Few Good Men.
Wonderful
boy.
News.
But I don't know what I would pick for... Right now, I'm picking A Few Good Men. When we watch Total Recall again, if we do, it might not move on. I might change it, but I don't know. I'll go with A Few Good Men here for quality as well.
Okay.
I'm guessing you do it too.
A Few Good Men is just among my favorite movies ever made. I think it is tremendous. And yes, I will be voting for it in quality of movie. What if I didn't? Can you imagine?
I don't know.
Can you imagine?
Harder Road to Success. We're going to go with A Few Good Men here because of how much more it made. And Total Recall had Arnold.
Total Recall did have Arnold.
And Paul Verhoeven, I believe, is the director.
Tom Cruise, not quite at the peak of his powers yet.
No, but
in 1992.
You know, it had a huge director. It had a huge, supporting actor, Nicholson, but I just think that, like, Schwarzenegger's bank, so...
Based on a huge play, I have to imagine. I mean, that is a...
They're probably disappointed with those legs, 25 getting to 19.
Yeah, whereas 15 getting to 141.
So A Few Good Men sweeps.
Yes, it does.
All right.
Two sweeps in a row.
So, next 2 weeks from now, what faces what?
All right. 2 weeks from now, we are going to see Apollo 13 take on A Few Good Men. And then we are going to see the Santa Claus take on Unforgiven.
Yeah, great. Makes a lot of sense. All right. That is it for the tournament. Let's get to some box office.
All right. So before we get into the top five at the box office, I do want to give you a quick top five of my own. Kind of my thing. This week saw the release of Arthur the King.
Yeah, just a great title.
I know. It makes me so happy.
It really,
it's such a...
You really hear that and you go, oh, yeah, the dog movie about the race.
Such a well-composed series of words. So I've ranked my top five Mark Wahlberg, but not top five Mark Wahlberg. Top five Mark Wahlberg based on a true story movies.
Top five episodes of Wahlberg's Wall Street?
Yes.
Entourage?
Top five menu items at Wahlburgers. No, he's made a tremendous amount.
Number one, the cup of water.
You can throw it at someone that you don't like. No, better joke. It's holy water.
There you go. Was that like because he beat that guy up?
Yeah.
Beat that guy to death. Throw water in his face. And it wasn't just him, I don't think. I don't know. Go ahead.
Mark Wahlberg has been in a tremendous number of movies where he is playing a real person, or portraying a true story.
Invincible. We mentioned it earlier.
Yeah. I didn't get consideration because I haven't seen it, but it is a great contender for the list. At number five, I have put Patriots Day.
Oh yeah, that was fun. Not fun, but it was well made. We like Patriots Day.
Yeah. The reason it's so low on my list is just that I didn't have a huge recollection of it other than I'm pretty sure I liked that.
No, yeah, we did like it.
I'm concerned about my list because there's two of these movies that kind of came out at similar times. The Berg era of making new thing, making true stories.
I'm sure another one's going to be on your list.
Okay, so they were both good. I was remembering.
Yeah, we like Deepwater Horizon. Yeah.
I was remembering liking one of them and not liking the other one as much. And I definitely remembered liking Deepwater Horizon. So I was like, Patriots Day must have been like cooler on. But either way, it came out several years ago and did not leave a huge lasting impact on me. So it comes in at number five.
Mm-hmm.
Still a fun watch. Number four, The Fighter.
Okay.
In which he is portraying a fighter. Maybe like conceptually a quote-unquote better movie than some of the things to come, but docked a few points. For one, Mark Wahlberg being the least interesting part of the movie. Everyone around him is giving like very big, loud, showy performances, and some of them are more successful than others, but they're all like really doing a thing, whereas Mark Wahlberg kind of spends the whole movie just being like, I want to fight that guy. I just want to fight Ma. I just want to fight wife. And also is a little too much of a confluence of problematic people.
Who else is problematic in it besides the director?
No, it's just Davey O. Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Also, you don't care for Melissa Leo very much, and I wanted to respect your opinions.
That's okay.
So it comes in at number four.
Okay.
Narrowly beating out a movie that I think I liked less, but got the points here. Lone Survivor.
Sure. I think, in my recollection, we like that less than The Bergs.
That's probably true. Patriots Day just did not implant on my brain. So Lone Survivor, fine movie. Could have been better. Didn't quite live up to his expectations. Number two, kind of a cheat, but is specifically based in part on the director's experiences. He also helped co-write the screenplay, so I decided to count it because I did like this movie very much. Instant Family.
Oh, yeah. What an adorable movie.
Not a direct true story, but like really, really fun, really heartwarming. This is kind of like what...
Is it a true story at all?
Yeah, well, it's based in part on the director's experiences.
Okay, gotcha. All
right, and he helped co-write it, so like, yeah, it's close enough. It's my list, damn it. But no, it is not a true story in the way that these other ones are. He did not play a real man. But it's really great, and I recommend everyone go check it out. And then number one is Deepwater Horizon, a movie that I recall very much fucking rocking. Just full of good performances and explosions. And they just kind of alternate between a good performance and then an explosion.
Deepwater Horizon?
Yes.
Yeah.
And what really, what more could you want in
not much
in a movie like that? So that gets us to our list. Onto the actual box office top five.
Let's do it.
This weekend saw Kung Fu Panda 4 in the one spot, followed by Dune Part 2, Arthur the King, Imaginary, and Cabrini. But Kung Fu Panda did take the number one spot with $30 million, a 48.3% drop, and that is up to 107.7 altogether.
Yeah, it's a good hold. It's on par with franchise history. It's doing really, really well. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is going to hurt the film, but there are no animated films until Garfield in late May, so could have legs after getting a little bit hurt next weekend. Because I feel like Ghostbusters is for sure going to skew families.
Sure.
And it's projected to do, you know, close to 50. So we will have to see. But either way, this is a massive win so far.
In second place was Dune Part 2, which made $28.5 million. It was a 38.3% drop. This is up to 204.7.
Yep, just plugging along. I know Ghostbusters is going to take some premium screens from it, some IMAX screens, probably some other stuff. So I think that's going to be tough on the hold next week, but and also taking older men probably.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be tough. But again, plugging along, it's going to make well over 250, probably around 275, but 300 we'll still have to wait and see here.
Yeah. And this has been two like really strong holds in a row. Sub 40% for this, yeah. I think is definitely notable. I think you're right. It's got some challenges ahead of it, but I'm not going to count it out just yet.
And I think that it's going to lose pretty much all its premium screens, in 2 weeks. Godzilla and Kong come out.
Oh, sure.
But yeah.
I think I'm looking out for another really strong hold next weekend on this one. Calling it now.
All right.
In third place, Arthur the King opened with $7.6 million.
Arthur the King. Yeah, it's below expectations. You know, usually dog movies are a pretty good bet at the box office. People were thinking around 10 or 12 for this.
Yeah.
It has an A cinema score. I think Kung Fu Panda really hurt it here. I saw some people online say that it was mainly being marketed during sporting events as more of a sports movie as opposed to targeting families and women, which kind of helped power Dog.
Sure.
In 2022, the Channing Tatum movie. I think that there's also a case to be made. I was reading an article earlier, a case to be made for movie stars who are splitting their time between streaming and theatrical releases and how that could be hurting your brand. You know, Mark Wahlberg's The Family Plan, a movie that I know you're completely aware of, came out as an Apple release, and it came out on Apple's streaming platform. It was their biggest original movie to date. So, of course, you've heard of it.
Just for the record, I couldn't tell you what it's about, but I have heard of it.
Okay, great. He's a dad who's like, they're both secret agents. I don't know. Their most watched original movie. And so I think that came out in like December, January. So I think the idea that, you know, you have a product that comes out here and makes a huge amount of money, and then you have like a smaller scale project in theaters, people are going to go, well, I just saw you at home. Right. So this movie should be available at home at some point.
What was that terrible movie he did where like he was the savior but had amnesia?
He was the savior.
Yeah, I think people kept prompting him with clues, and then he would like remember Kung Fu or something.
Whoa!
I think it was back on Netflix.
It was on Paramount Plus. Manzoukas was in it.
Okay,
it was called. I keep forgetting the name of it. I want to say Infinity something. Infinite.
Yeah, Infinite. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, terrible. One of the worst movies of that year.
There's another thing.
But like, if you keep putting movies out on streaming, people are expecting. It's the same thing that happened with Pixar. It could start happening with not just brands, but it could start happening with movie stars.
Yeah.
So just something to think about.
I think there's also something to be said for not sticking to a streamer.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he started out making all these streaming movies for Netflix. He had Spencer Confidential.
Yeah.
Another movie that I have heard of but do not know what it is. Then he goes to Paramount for some reason with Infinite. And now
he had a movie with Kevin Hart also. For Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I thought he was a Netflix guy.
Yeah.
I'm surprised to learn that he's been doing stuff for Apple.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just like fine.
Below expectations for Arthur the King.
Yeah.
Sorry.
In fourth place, Imaginary made 5.5%. It was a 44% drop and is up to $19 million altogether.
It's an okay hold, but after a disappointing opening, it's a disappointing result.
Yeah.
You know. And the reason why it's an okay hold is because it didn't make a lot last weekend. So, you know, that's enough.
Yeah. Not always guaranteed, but it is what you're supposed to do. When you open to a small number, you got to hold well. Speaking of not doing that, Cabrini in fifth place made $2.8 million. That was a 60.8% drop, and that is up to $13 million.
Yep. Also opening this weekend, One Life. Where did that come in? What was the number?
That was in eighth place with 1.7.
Yeah, it got pretty decent reviews. Decent to good reviews, like 86 on Rotten Tomatoes. But there's a lack of marketing or buzz. The American Society of Magical Negroes opened.
Sorry, I'd clicked on One Life and now do remember what that is. That was ninth place with 1.3.
It had bad reviews. It's also like, what's the point of releasing a movie in 1,147 theaters? Either do it limited or release it wide. Very strange to dump it in that small amount of theaters.
That is pretty odd.
That feels like, hey, we need to put it out, so let's just put it out. Release. Yeah. Makes you think you don't care about it. And then Love Lies Bleeding in its second week had a big expansion and a decent enough PTA for this type of flick per theater average. It's in what, sixth?
Yes, it is in sixth place.
What's the per theater?
1,825.
Yeah, pretty decent for this type of movie. I think they're going to keep expanding it, but I don't expect a whole lot. And that's all I have.
Yeah. All right. Well, then it is time to play everybody's favorite game. Did it make more or less than Arthur the King?
Wow.
The game where Brian has to pee. The game where each and every week you tell me whether three movies opened better or worse than this week's top opener. Of course, for a bonus point, you can tell me the year each movie came out. Are you ready to play?
Yes.
Your three movies are, well, let's start with the first one.
That's a good one to start with.
And you'll have to forgive me for saying this because you're not supposed to say nor think the title of The Bye-Bye Man.
Oh, no.
The Bye-Bye Man did open to more,
I think it was like 12 or something,
than Arthur the King.
Oh God, when the hell did that come out? What are you, 2018?
It was 2017.
Oh my God.
Close, but no cigar there. And now we will both be plagued by the Bye-Bye Man, as we have said thought his
stop
name.
Stop saying it and stop thinking
it's
it.
It's such a stupid thing to say. How do you call your movie that? Your second film is Money Monster.
Sounds like you're making a villain, like a monster for a baby.
Yeah. Oh,
go to sleep or the Bye-Bye Man will visit.
It's the nap time bandit.
Yeah. All right. What is it?
Money Monster.
More.
George Clooney, Julia Roberts. Money. That did open to more.
2015. 16. Changing it to 16.
Changing it
to 16.
And he'll be happy he did. It did come out in 2016. You have secured the win. And now you can answer the final film, Prisoners.
More. The Denis Villeneuve?
The Denis Villeneuve.
More. That opened in first place, I think.
Yeah. The way this shook out, I always just do these in alphabetical order.
Uh-huh.
And I realized after the fact that it went from hardest to easiest.
2013.
That's also correct.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your 5 points. You did not sweep this round, but still very successful. Come and Gone from a Theater Near You. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to pee. Go ahead.
Well, I bet you peed in 2015, so you can reminisce on
Come
that.
On!
2015, March 13th.
Oh,
you have
right.
Two movies.
you
come on.
2015.
Get the answers. You want to be
give
so
some,
damn bad.
Give me some clues.
All right. This is a family film.
Uh-huh.
Number one. You got a number one and a number two.
Uh-huh.
So to speak. This was a sort of the start of a movement.
What?
Like a theatrical movement. A distribution company. A production company, really.
It was their first film?
No, but it was the, I believe, the first in their sort of line of doing these things. They made a bunch of movies of this nature since then.
What the heck? Is nature a keyword there?
No, it's not. It's though not, they do also make a bunch of movies where that's a keyword.
It's not Disney nature?
No.
Oh, Cinderella.
Yes.
70.
67.8.
Oh, close.
Very close. Your second film is an adult thriller. Hot. I think you call it a thriller, like a crime movie.
Hot.
Let's see. Let me pull up the.
Do we see it?
I have not seen this movie.
Why?
I don't think it looked super good.
Is it with Beyonce? Obsessed?
No, Beyonce does not feature in this movie. Uh-huh. Common does.
Whoa.
As well as Ed Harris.
Whoa.
This is one of those where I can just give you like the entire supporting cast.
Sure,
I don't
ahead.
Think it'll work. So bottom to top, Ed Harris, Common. This is in just the side starring section of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Genesis Rodriguez, who I do not know who that is. Bruce McGill. Nick Nolte. Vincent D'Onofrio. Joel Kinnaman, who is in the second spot. So it's everyone but the lead.
Who's the lead?
The lead is Liam Neeson.
Oh.
He plays a character nicknamed...
Run All Night.
The Grave
Run
Digger.
All Night.
It is Run All Night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Joel Kinnaman plays his kid. Okay.
Yes, he plays Jimmy Conlon, which is probably the...
he's Irish, baby.
Yeah, the most...
Jimmy Conlon.
The most Irish mobster in a movie name you'll ever hear.
That opened to 14...
That opened to 11.
Oh, so, damn. Yeah. No, I don't know. I wouldn't give
okay.
you that one.
Okay, 11 to 14 is a
yeah,
break.
I wouldn't give you that one.
Fair
All right.
Enough.
Recommend a movie for the folks this week / weekend.
All right. I have not yet seen Love Lies Bleeding, but I don't care about Arthur the King. And we're moving on from the excitement.
You
can
tell
the,
people to see
the
Ghostbusters.
No, I can't. It's in my contract. Not allowed.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
So, yeah, go check out Love Lies Bleeding as it continues to expand.
Yeah, I'll
bet
say the same thing.
Like
I have no better ideas.
Fucking
sure.
Ghostbusters.
I'll say that.
You could have said Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Plug us up.
You can find us at whatsintheboxoffice.com. We are on Twitter at @WitBoxOffice. This is also our Instagram handle. I am on Twitter at Noah Drucki.
I'm at Brian DeSerber, DASURBER.
Of course, the feed for our podcast can be found anywhere podcasts are found. We are on Stitcher. No, we're not. We're on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. I believe Google Podcasts is about to go away at the beginning of April. I've got to make the switch soon, so we won't be on that anymore. But you can find us on YouTube Music, which I think is what they're becoming. It should be YouTube Podcasts. Maybe it is. I don't think so, though. End of my thoughts about my personal podcast listening experience.
All right. Next week, we have Ghostbusters Frozen Empire coming out. We'll getting the whole gang back together, improve upon Ghostbusters Afterlife's grosses. We'll find out. Plus, Multiplex Madness second run continues. The second half of the round of 32. We'll be discussing the films that were almost drafted in the original Multiplex Madness 2000 tournament and the Multiplex Madness
pronounced with an IP
tournament. That is all next week. This has been What's in the Box Office. I have been your host, Brian.
I've been your host, Noah.
We'll see you next week. And until then, go see a movie.